In the name of one God, Holy Trinity, Amen. If we were to go through the last several weeks of lessons that Luke's gospel has delivered to us and look at them one by one, we might walk away astonished at the diversity of issues that seems to catch Jesus' attention, and we could come away with the conclusion that Jesus has great interest in a diversity of topics like waging war, the commodities market, social etiquette, sheep ranching, and family matters. He's made direct commentary on them all in the last few weeks. This morning is no different. This morning, we get what biblical commentators call the parable of the shrewd manager, or some call it the parable of the dishonest steward. Nevertheless, it seems to be another installment in Jesus's interest in a wide variety of subjects. But if we were to look back over the course of the last several weeks, lessons as separate or unrelated, other than the fact that they come from Jesus, we likely walk away scratching our heads and thinking of Jesus as talented and interested in a wide variety of topics, yet weird. And we ask ourselves, is Jesus just a nerdy intellectual who knows a little bit about everything, an easy companion at a cocktail party because of his wide and varied interests? And it would seem this morning that he presents us with a case study for first-year B school students on management principles. Suppose by now we're beginning to pick up on the fact that what Jesus talks about on the surface of things is hardly ever the point of the story or particularly representative of the wisdom he is seeking to impart. And yet, there is a purpose of these diversity of topics too, as they each topic lands some way in our everyday lives. Maybe not exactly the same way as they did 2,000 years ago, but they touch on the fact that we, disciples today, live here and now with all the blessings and challenges and complications of making our way through life together. So let's take a closer look at the B school case study we have for this morning. Jesus tells the story of a manager who's doing a poor job, or really it doesn't seem like he's doing a poor job. It doesn't seem like he's doing his job at all. He's not performing the role he's been employed to perform. And it seems as though the water cooler gossip about this guy is that he's not pulling his weight, and it catches the attention of upper management. Upper management sends the lazy manager an email requesting an accounting for his hours and the progress that he's made on the work in front of him. What happens next? Well, you know, the email seems to get the man's attention, right? No one wants to get an email like this. The man reacts, "Oh, shucks. I'm in trouble here." He starts to panic. "I can't lose this job. I'm too old to get another one. I'll never get hired. I don't think I have enough in the 401k to ride this thing out." What happens next? I suppose if we think of Jesus as the B school prof, we might walk away thinking, well, that smart Jesus is reminding those of us in upper management that we need to keep watch on those in middle management a little more closely. And it reminds those of us in middle management not to take our positions for granted and to buckle down and perform. Of course, I don't think that's the point of the story. So our lazy coworker gets to work. He starts making deals. He's writing off debt. He's collecting what he can. He's making stronger business relationships with the clients that he has by attempting to make things a little easier on them too. He's hustling. He's scared. He knows that any day now, the email's coming to ask him to come to the 55th floor with ledger in hand. And of course, the email does come. The lazy worker who's been hustling gathers his ledgers, boards the elevators, and arrives in the executive suites. Upper management pores over his books and is wowed by this guy's hustle. The lazy worker is commended for his work over the course of the last however many days, because upper management knows a bird in hand is worth 100 flying. That's business. And then Jesus turns to his disciples and says, "Fellas, if you want to keep working for me, you've got to become a hustler, right?" No, that's not what happens. Because that's not the point of the story. It's not the point of this story or the point of any story that Jesus ever tells to become a hustler. So let me try to reach for the point or the points. The points that lead to the point of the myriad of different stories that Jesus is telling us over the course of the last several weeks, whether it's ranch management leaving the 99 to find the one, or business management hustling to make the most of an anxiety-filled HR crisis, whether it's lessons on social etiquette and the seat you might take for yourself over and against the one you deserve or the one you've been given by your host, whether it's your treatment of mother or father, sister or brother, sister-in-law or brother-in-law, whether it's your decision about whether to wage war over a weaker enemy or to wage peace over a stronger one. I believe Jesus is saying to you, to us, that this life that we live is ours. And in a life that is ours, we're empowered to act. I believe Jesus is saying to his disciples, and we are his disciples, but I believe Jesus is saying to his disciples out of the stands and onto the playing field, that Jesus is saying we aren't spectators, we're players. There's no such thing as spectators in the life of love. I believe Teddy Roosevelt really captures the essence of Jesus' gospel moment when he wrote, "It is not the critic who counts, not the man or the woman who points out how the strong one stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the one, the disciple, the follower who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes up short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasm, the great devotion, who spends herself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails by daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat." church. There is no point in having a church if we are not being the church. There is no point in faith if it is not embodied. There is no point of heaven if we are not working on heaven all the way to heaven. And there is no point in love if it is not shared. In my mind and in my heart, this is the point. This is the point that all the other points are leading us toward. And I am grateful that we are a church that can look toward Jesus and respond, "Yes, Rabbi, friend, brother, we are in." Amen.